So this is only 4.5 minutes, so we're probably going to repeat it. It's
Jesus.
You'll
okay.
See.
Which the first word is transparency, which represents the trend.
Yeah. Okay. Stop, Clinton. Stop.
Well, sounds like the guy.
Okay. What he's going to do? The interviewer has asked him, I think, to give 5 words to describe the present.
Oh, so I remember this. Yeah.
Yeah. And the first word, you might miss it, is transparency. That's what he's quickly starting to say. Transparency, blah, blah, blah. That's his first word. And then he does the question is more important than the answer. And then he does the digital unconscious. Then he does the word tactile. And then he does page placement gimmick that an Italian invented, but Larry Page turned it into Google. And he comes up with the word hyper pertinent. So we're talking transparency. The question is more important than the answer, the digital unconscious, the tactile, and the hyper pertinent. Those are the 5 themes.
Jesus. So, okay. So this channel is called 5 Words for the Future. It has 31 subscribers. This video was made in 2014. Their last video came out 11 months ago. They've been doing this for like 7 years and they got 31 subscribers. Derek's video has got 5 likes and I am one of them. Apparently I liked this when I saw it. Okay. Wow, it's just that's perseverance, man. 31 subscribers in 7 years. You find the world to find these geniuses and get their opinion on their 5 favorite words.
I have a Twitter account that just turned 3 years old, and only then very shortly afterwards got its 4th follower.
Damn.
Scott Ritter just got banned from Twitter.
Who the fuck is okay, Greg.
Who that is.
You don't know who that is?
Scott from Canada?
Yeah, we know.
No, you know who Scott Ritter is, Bob?
Yeah, he was the old investigator of, Iraq war bombs.
Yeah, he was the UN weapons inspector that basically blew the lid off the thing and said, look, we've looked all around this country. We can't find any weapons of mass destruction.
Damn.
So he's been out talking a lot about he's been making the rounds on a lot of the sort of independent programs, Duran and...
Is he criticizing propaganda over the Ukraine thing?
No, he's going through and saying what really is probably going on in Ukraine and with the Russian army. He's saying, well, this is what they're probably doing. And any of these reports, basically, I don't know whether you were here, Clinton, when I read this report, evidently NBC has come out and said that, amazingly, that almost everything that's been said about the Ukraine war on American media is a complete lie, and by the politicians, is all just made up out of thin air.
That it hasn't been passed along because it's solid intelligence.
No, it's just all.
That's not what's guiding their editorial policy.
They just say things because they think that if they say something, it will get a particular reaction from the Chinese or from the Russians or something. That they make stuff up.
Yeah, they're trying to anticipate the war. They're doing Midnight Report, or whatever, Midnight, that Tom Cruise movie. They're trying to anticipate the crimes Putin's going to do and cancel them somehow, right?
Minority Report? I see.
Yeah, Minority Report.
No, they just make stuff. They go, okay, what do we think? What would people believe that he might do? And they go, how about a chemical attack? Like, there's absolutely no reason. There's no reason why a modern military like the Russians have would engage in a chemical attack. What possible
Greg, you just possible don't understand. You just don't understand the basics of information war like the average CNN viewer has been informed on. They know perfectly well what it means to live in an information war. It means that they sit through it and they agree with whatever it says because they got to win the war with the information, okay?
That's right.
They don't care if it's true or not. They care about winning and the best information, not the truest information.
It's like when Obama says, Look, okay, if Assad uses chemical weapons, that's the red line. And then within a week or something, like they're winning, and then the Syrian army is winning the war. They're winning the war. And he goes, if there's a red line, then we're going to move in. And what happens a week later? There's a chemical attack.
Hilarious. Okay, Derek Chikurkov. Here we go. Nice try, Greg. You got an extra 4 minutes out of that. Okay.
What did I do?
Nice performance.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, excellent.
Foghorn.
Yes. Yeah, Steve approves. Here we go. Five words for the future.
Where are we going? What are we doing?
Listen, Greg.
Oh, okay.
Derek.
Okay, do I need to turn this up?
Yes, we don't hear anything.
Okay, this is Derek Chikurkov. Okay, hold on. I'm just going to download the fucking thing because it's the actual video itself is quiet as hell. No wonder nobody watches this shit. I got to download the thing. YouTube. Okay, there we go.
What do you use to download YouTube videos?
A command line software. I type in Linux and, yeah, it's all typing on my keyboard. On
Dimitri sent me something about that. I couldn't figure out how to do it.
It's YouTube DL. It's a Python script, really. It's that simple. You just have to know all the command line arguments. So you can download just the audio directly, like the audio stream, and not download the video at all. That's how I get all my songs off, right? But then you got to transcode them to MP3 because Bill's thing doesn't play M4As natively, unfortunately. Anyway, that's all besides the point.
That's all,
folks. Yeah.
Oh, hey, Clinton, besides, I was going to tell you about the point you made about most developers learning just how to build websites. I was going to give a little nuance.
Please do. You, it's your bread and butter here I'm talking about.
Okay, so like when it comes to websites, sometimes you get a little cross-training in the back end, you know, like server technology. So that could be like an in if you wanted to go deeper into like the, you know, because with server technology, it could be something as innocent as MVC, which is Model View Controller.
Yeah.
You know, a person making a request to the server. The server makes a call to the model. It compiles the data and sends the view back to the client. So that's the model view client model. But then, you know, you start using like less, you stop doing all the HTML stuff and working purely with the database, purely with these services. And, you know, little by little, if you wanted to, you could transition more to like working with hardware, you know, Raspberry Pis or whatever.
That makes sense. I mean, you gotta like play both sides of the API, so to speak.
Yeah.
To get around the stack, right? Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. When Greg was saying like, what's the big rush to teach kids programming? I was just like being very clear here that programming, I bet like, it's like, well, it's one step better than being, you know, learning Excel, but like not by much, you know what I mean? Like,
the rush to teach kids programming, or wasn't it the rush to teach coal miners programming?
The programming that they're learning is probably like JavaScript for web development, or maybe like, you know, like Python for AI, for training data sets for an AI or something, right? It's not programming in an actual computer sense. They're not learning C or C++ en masse. That's
right,
not the most hip thing. It's like a language for a specific ends, so you can have a specific job in a specific role, right?
Yeah, it's very fragmented. Yeah, or like DevOps, for example.
Yeah. There's people who can program who still know jack shit about computers and need to fucking take it into fucking Future Shop or something to get it fixed. So, all right, here we fucking go. I think.
Represents the
okay.
which, the first word is transparency, which represents the trend towards which technology is bringing society now, and it's global. The second word would be big data, which is actually a paradigmatic change. From the society of network, we enter into a very different kind of approach to technology, which is database and not just connection. And the characteristic of big data is that the information does not exist until the question. It's not like the past when you didn't know where was the information, but it was somewhere. You know, a book in a library somewhere, a recording, a person, a vestigia of some sort. Now, and it's a big challenge to intelligence, you create the response by the question. And that becomes the most important part now. It's not the answer, it is the question. How do you formulate the right question to the big data? It announces or it prefigures a very strong cognitive change. Yeah. And so I find that very important. The digital unconscious is my third word. The digital unconscious is everything that's known about you that you don't know. And I believe that it's going to have even more impact on your daily life, guiding your choices, your voting, your anxieties, your joys. We've already been accustomed by television and by marketing to more or less decide for us what we really want. The digital unconscious is going to be even more. And of course, it's related to the big data, and it's related to the transparency issue. Another feature of my research for the moment is the tactile. I'm just coming up with a book now called The Point of Being. And it's actually just been published. And it studies the response of electricity to the point of view. The point of view was brought on by literacy, was brought on with theater, was brought on with a perspective. Whereas this new tactile dimension that we are now seeing in all our media creates a very different type of relationship. And instead of being distant from things, the tactile includes things like intuition, participation. There are so many different things that now are putting themselves, are coming together in some fashion. So that's my fourth. And then I'm doing this on the fly, so to speak. So, because I've got many. I mean, I could give you hypertinence. Hypertinence is the incredible and fast development of search engines. Now, again, related to big data and to information available, a search engine today can bring the text and the context together, the question and the answer together. The biggest development in search engines has been owed to an Italian called Massimo Marchiori, who invented page ranking. He didn't realize that he was inventing a search engine. He thought he was inventing a social media. At least he thought he was inventing one. But what ends up is that Larry Page took the invention and turned it into Google. Hypertinence is that concept of the tendency of searches to become ever more precise. Hyperpertinence, as opposed to the impertinence, which is probably everything that I have just finished saying.
All right.
So the words were transparency, big data, digital unconscious, tactile, and hyperpertinence. So here's my opening remarks. I don't think McLuhan used the word transparency too much, but here and there he'd use it. The famous line McLuhan said, 20th century man is run down the street, and he says, I have all the answers, what are the questions? So Derek is building on that. And then the digital unconscious, every technology is an unconscious, page 31 of Counterblast, 1969 edition. And he's saying what we don't know. Now, okay, I'll just leave that. What you don't know about yourself is your digital unconscious. And I think he just recently got that published. And the fourth one was tactility. He says intuition, participation, no more perspective, detachment, point of view. He says the point of view, electricity's response to the point of view is the way he says it. It cancels the viability of the point of view. And then hyperpertinence is everything is more precise. I forgot to say. So tactility, point number four, that's from McLuhan. Hyperpertinence, that's not McLuhan. So you see how Derek adds a little bit to McLuhan.
Hmm. Yeah. This idea of the question preceding the answers seems like a feint to me. It seems like a sleight of hand. Like
maybe you mean this, Clinton. The joke that McLuhan told is better. Derek takes McLuhan and garbles it. Says it backwards or upside down. And that's how he, what you just said. He's a little off. What was your word? He faints it.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think that the website that answers your search question was spontaneously generated out of nothing what's that theory that Pascal disproved about maggots magically appearing in rotting meat? That theory of spontaneous fucking generation of fucking life. Like, the answers aren't magically willed into existence. That existed somewhere from which the answer was generated after you asked the question. I don't quite get what he's saying with that.
He's saying the question's more important than the answer. But of course, when you're Googling, you ask a question.
Yeah, well, I don't ask a question. I just throw in keywords because I'm not a moron.
Okay, then he's raising the cliche of moronness to archetypal intensity.
Now, it is important that the formation of the question is I'm paraphrasing the fucking plot of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. But,
yeah. Or the effects precede the causes.
Right. You understand the basic plot of the Hitchhiker's Guide, Bob?
Yeah, I know the movie. I saw the movie. I had the book.
Yeah, the whole universe is waiting to, is a giant computer which exists to answer a question, and it culminates. Answers 42, but no one knows what the question is. Yeah.
That's McLuhan's point. I mean, maybe Adams read McLuhan's statement, which was, I think, in The Listener, about 1971 or 72, when he was debating Jonathan Miller over Miller's 1971 book on McLuhan. And he said, no one in Britain knew anything about mediaecology. Now, wasn't Douglas Adams British?
Yes, he was. Yes.
Yeah. So I think he put that book out in 71, 72.
Oh, yeah, around there, I think.
Got it from that McLuhan point. The questions are more important than the answers.
That's worth investigating. I wonder if Douglas Adams heard McLuhan.
Yeah,
I like the Kirchhoff phrase "digital unconscious," even though it seems almost cliche. More so than his later term "digital twin," which you borrowed from engineering. All right.
You point out he'll be new to people who haven't heard me discuss McLuhan and how the real unconscious is our technological unconscious. It's better than Freud and Jung, you know. Yeah, that great quote on page 31. That's what should be acknowledged. We should acknowledge what McLuhan said, and then if you have something to add to it, go ahead. But don't take McLuhan and then just think you've got digital con. You're making it up. No, it's got an antecedent. It's got a tradition.
Yeah. Right.
So it's a good phrase. It's a phrase Mark Stallman missed. He should have put that into his fucking Center for Digital Studies, you know, whatever his thing is called.
Yeah, Center for Digital Life.
The Study of Digital Life. I think it's Center for the Study of Digital Life. But it should be the Digital Unconscious. But Mark doesn't know enough McLuhan to get it. So Dukurkov obsolesces Stallman.
Yeah. Well, it's a credit to Dukurkov.
Yeah, give him a credit. But the thing is, he says that the hyperpertinent is very precise. It allows us, the tech body gets more and more precise. Then he says, it's not impertinent, which everything I've said probably is. It makes a clever ending that everything he just said was impertinent. Now, yes, it was impertinent to McLuhanism. It was a ripoff of McLuhanism without acknowledging it. I'm not sure of all the meanings of impertinent. Does it mean irrelevant? Is he admitting that you cannot speak to the digital unconscious? His laying out the five words is a futile effort.
It seemed to just mean precision.
Hyperpertinent, he said, was precision.
Right. Now, all right, the question with the answer is getting more and more direct. Like, it's funny because I remember a phrase from McLuhan where he's talking about the fetishization of precision. Fetishization is my term, right? But it just means it's like people who fetishize precision because they, you know, it feels like being more and more accurate or getting closer to the truth, but really you're just increasing the precision on the same answer you've had this whole fucking time, right?
Right. What you're missing the fuzzy logic.
Yeah, right. You're not getting an analogical proportionate sense of you know,
the tactile, the gap.
The gap. Yeah. Yeah.
And see, that's what they realized in AI. They had to figure out how to do fuzzy logic, right?
Oh God. Have you?
Go ahead.
Have you seen that new fucking? So today, like you've seen these AI generated artwork things. Brian's been fucking around with these GPT-3 models. No, that's language GPT. But these fucking art, like you put a sentence and it generates a picture. So you can be like, I want a unicorn in a bikini, and then the AI draws you something that vaguely looks like a unicorn.
Although the one I've been using gives you something, it gives you something deliberately kind of dreamy and vague, like a suggestion of that. A pretty good suggestion, but.
Yeah, here's a Twitter thread of this new fucking model that they ran, that the OpenAI Foundation has developed. Scroll through this fucking Twitter thread I just posted in the chat.
Alrighty.
Clinton, about your talk, I was telling Carolyn this, whether you can build your computer and have that autonomy, the open source movement, or you're just a consumer and you take the latest. The larger effects of these digital technologies, it doesn't respect whether you know how to make the computer or not, or where it came from. And so the larger effects, what you might say total field, are what we need to make an inventory, and that is what the Stallman Society people have to recognize. Yeah, you're trying to get people to learn how to do it and be autonomous from the big companies. But if we all were doing that, we would still be using the computers and they would have the general effects they've had to destroy everything in the past 20 years. That's something you need to consider. You follow what I'm saying?
Oh, if we keep the computer, we're going to keep having the effects.
Yeah, there's going to be the effects we've had, which is total destruction of everything, of any old former institutions, and nobody knows anything anymore. You know, the general complaint about life in Facebook. That would happen whether you knew how to make a computer. If you had a billion Clintons, that would still be happening to the Clinton Society, unless you had a billion Bobs who don't know anything about computers, we'd still suffer the same effects.
It's a bold experiment. I suggest we try it. We need a billion U's and a billion me's, and we'll just take on the other 9 billion. See what happens.
Well, that's my solution for most socialists. Sisters, you take a
more of me. Yeah, that is your solution, isn't it? I'm sorry. I mean,
what'd you say? What's the solution?
I said, yeah, your solution is more of you to every problem. You're not wrong there.
No, I don't mean that. I'm saying I have a solution. What I've been saying for 30 years is take abortion. Have the society only do abortion for 5 or 10 years, and that's all that's permitted, abortion. See what happens to unforeseen effects on social relationships and families and whatever else would be in the inventory. Then you do a society for 5 or 10 years with no fucking abortions. You know, really the religious fundamentalist dream, and see what happens. If you could organize society that way, you then would have some data to compare after 20 years.
I see.
So your experiment fits into that.
All right. I'd be happy to take a quadrant of for this
take a quadrant.
Social engineering experiment.
Okay.
So anyway, I think that would be a great way to generate a measurable list of effects with the work in controlled circumstances like that. It's kind of funny how you're trying to reinvent the laboratory situation. Just at a larger scale, we're keeping things natural enough where we're not entering visual space by making a laboratory. It's the slackest laboratory in the world. It's practically reality. You know, still a fucking laboratory, still a giant science experiment, but don't worry. Do your thing, guys.
So I'm looking at the Twitter. What are we supposed to notice?
You just see these pictures?
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
These were generated by an AI based on the sentence you see in the tweet.
Oh,
these are not
wow.
real photos. These are made up instantly by a computer. I want a Shiba Inu dog wearing a beret and a black turtleneck. Now look at the teddy bears mixing sparkling chemicals as mad scientists in the style of steampunk, in the style of a 1990s Saturday morning cartoon, and as digital art. Like, you just tell the computer, like, graphic designers and the people who make images for fucking like magazines are out of a job, man.
Yeah.
You just,
what you want to do is you want to make a sentence with the word tech body in it and see what happens.
The bowl of soup that looks like a monster knitted out of wool. Like, look at that shit.
Yeah, that's vivid.
It's vivid.
That's a lot more vivid than the ones that I've been using, that's for sure. Yeah, no, I'd like to see what it does with stuff like TechBody.
Yeah.
Sure.
That it would blow up because it would be about itself.
So this is just basically a computer can go online, pick up images somewhere. Is that what it's doing? And finding images that are related?
Well, how AI works is first it trains on stuff. So it has looked at pictures probably for years. They probably trained it with billions of images that are like tagged, but it knows what something knitted out of wool looks like. It knows what a monster looks like. It knows what a Saturday morning cartoon looks like, etc.
Yeah.
And then it can spontaneously generate any of these things after parsing the English prompt. Yeah.
Okay, Clinton, how's this relate to Dukerkhov? Why'd you bring this up?
Because this is the only thing I can think of that the answer is created based on the question, right?
Yeah.
First, you give it a prompt, and then it generates that image of that exact fucking thing to all of its specificity or hyper-pertinence, if you want to be a goof, you know. Hyper-pertinence,
So how long do you think it would take to... for the order to go out with this, the Shiba Inu dog wearing a beret and a black turtleneck, how long do you think it takes for it to be able to create that image? Do you have any idea?
Probably between minutes and hours. I wouldn't suspect it to be longer than hours.
Okay, let's just stick with the thing. Is there transparency here? Is there tactility here? Is there Google Pages? Is there?
I think there are a lot of jobs being lost. That's what I think.
The digital unconscious.
Yeah, dude. Can you imagine the fucking hentai that's going to come out of this? Oh my god. Okay.
Hentai.
Yeah, it's a dream of an advertising agency, like a creative department in an advertising agency, where they just go, "Hey, let's do this, that, and the other thing. Hey, let's put it in. Oh yeah, there it is. Oh, let's change a word here or there. We'll get something good. Oh yeah.
Now let's do it in the style of Starry Night by
The only thing they wouldn't like about it, I mean, I don't know whether this is expensive technology or something. The only thing they wouldn't like about it is that anybody else could do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That any basically, you don't need an advertising agency of people sitting around pretending they're creative when you could have inane ideas coming up anywhere at any place at a company and just bring someone in off the shop floor and say, "Hey, think of something really weird. Oh, blah, 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 blah." Okay.
Okay. Now, Greg, think big, Greg. This is a point that Derek misses, is that more and more you have extreme democracy where everybody's placeable. What's the word? Fungible? Anybody can do anything. So only 20 people get employed, and they rotate them every 3 months, and then 20 other people get employed. That's the larger effect here. That's the larger unconscious.
Why rotate?
Expertise, hierarchy.
No, there'd be no need. No one would. If anybody had those 20 jobs, they'd never want to give them up. They wouldn't want to rotate with anybody because they go, "Hey, I've got this job. I'm keeping it."
Well, that's the new. That was Egypt. You know, as they say, Egypt was the high priesthood. They had the secret slack, and millions built the pyramids. So, and this is what McLuhan said: hierarchy disappears under electronic decentralization. So we're all obsolete, according to Ion. The tech body runs everything completely now. Everybody is possessed by the tech body. That's something that we will not allow ourselves to acknowledge. We won't. We keep thinking something bad's coming. But whatever the digital unconscious could do to us has been done.
Apparently, lots of people are able to use this thing now. I see people posting this shit all over the place.
Why couldn't there be some AI thing where the AI has all of the office hour shows
and generates
access to all of them?
Endless Bob content.
And then, and then just make up. They go, okay, you tell them which songs Clinton picked in the first hour. Which ones I pick, which ones Brian.
You could make whole new songs. They're like part ELO, part fucking weird ass shit. Like, what kind of songs does Clinton play? Let's make brand new pop songs that never existed. Of course.
they pick the nuances of all of us and our voices, pick out words, and we'd have to give them ideas about what to do.
They show pictures of Stalin and Lenin or.
Just forget about pictures. Just what about the audio? If you want, sure. Be an easy way to do a whole video show with, like, forget cameras, just start having it making up video stuff as well. Sounds a lot easier than having to do the show. We could actually get some stuff done.
No, there's nothing to do, Greg.
Okay.
Yeah.
Greg,
are you saying that you make AI based on what songs you feed it as the kind of show it will produce?
Yeah. Let's say it got to listen to all the office hour shows. And you tell the AI which songs were picked by which people. And then Bob would say, "All right, this week it's, Clinton goes first, then Brian, then me, then Greg." And then you tell the AI just to either pick songs that haven't been chosen before, but would be in the same vein. Like, what predictive of what a person might pick based on what they picked in the past.
I don't think that's
I'm not
going to
lie. This is an extremely lame use of one of the most powerful, amazingly potent technologies to ever fucking exist. I mean, we could be
speaking
over fucking countries with the fucking deep, like, I mean, this is like Sorcerer's Bullet, and we want to produce radio shows with our own voices in it, talking about bullshit no one's going to listen to.
Right.
We can do that for free. We already do that for 5 hours
that's
a week.
Don't
you want
to
be made
of
5 hours every
Wednesday?
Think my musical taste is like?
Don't you think it would be more interesting to hear what the AI thought about us and what we do actually doing the show?
Well, we have to do the show to spark it, unless you're just using the archives.
Yeah, you use the old ones.
Okay, I added the waitlist link, so you can all join up to get access to this thing when it. I'm an academic researcher.
Nobody listens to it, but I don't think anybody. The rebel guy. What are those Weinstein brothers and those dark fucking Peter Thiel clones or Peter Thiel networks? They say a bunch of interesting ideas, but they don't say the range we have. Nobody has the range of stuff that's said that no one else would say.
That's true.
Which speaks to the point you were trying to make about demonstrating or showing the total field, not just talking about it like a concept. Very good point. I appreciate you making that earlier, by the way. So,
raccoon astronaut with the cosmos reflecting on the glass of his helmet, dreaming of the stars. And the thing looks like somebody painted it.
Yeah.
The ears, ears are done like a dry brush.
This is all fascinated by imagery. Get out of that hypnosis. We've got
an astronaut surfing on a sea turtle over a rainbow past planets in space. That's pretty cool.
Great.
Bunny meets Popeye and has sex with olive oil. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
That's the moving version of it, right? Can you imagine what it would do with that?
Again, that's what I'm saying.
No,
fucking
yes, I can.
Like,
no, it's speech obsolescence. All this. If you have an interesting conversation, like, why is Skip fascinated every week? She recognizes that she's hearing a collage of ideas that she would never hear anywhere else. And this is what we're doing. We are collaging whatever you want to call your Marxist stuff, and then Clinton's on-the-ground digital world, then Brian's extreme alternative culture, counterculture stuff, then my McLuhan or even Ion or LaRouche. Nobody puts that together. So we produce talk that is interesting because no one's ever heard it talked about like that.
Okay, that's one way to look at it.
Yeah, well, it's a good way. The way points out the importance. The good stuff is always on the leading edge, and nobody knows it. It's a new environment.
Oh,
the bleeding edge. Like, you just listen to these Zappa bootlegs. They're so incredible. Everybody's a fucking turkey compared to him in the guitar 50 fucking years ago. Oh, that reminds me. We did get a compliment.
A compliment?
Yeah.
I'm very distrustful of compliments.
I'm suspicious.
I'm always suspicious. Remember you got in touch with me and somebody said, you got in touch with somebody and said, Greg Duffel, what happened to his show and all that? I used to enjoy his show and he said,
no way.
And I'm going, no, I don't like this.
we need paranoia.
There's something wrong about this.
And Clinton, whoever was saying about charismatic, McLuhan's idea of charisma, I think Brian said was odd. Yeah, what was odd? He said charisma was somebody looking like the kind of people you'd want to meet, and they kind of like the norm. But that's not what charisma is. Charisma is usually something different, stands out in the crowd. So he actually read, he defined charisma wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, his definition was just seemingly totally unrelated to how that whole idea is usually understood.
No,
that's
charisma,
right.
Charisma is looking like a whole many different people, but all together, all at the same time.
No, not different. He says charisma is someone who looks like the kind of people you'd want to meet. In other words, and he
usually said
normalcy in there. It's the opposite of charisma.
The reference to normalcy was that that you resemble a lot of other people who are socially acceptable.
Right. Which, that would be one kind of charisma. That would be white people charisma, say. But there's other kinds of charisma. You know, minority culture charisma.
Right.
So, again, McLuhan blew it. Or, no, that's his manipulative satire. He's fucking with the meaning to get you to think and to get you out of your rut. You know, in 66, there was an article on him in the New York Times, and he'd spoken in some corporate place, and someone had asked him, why are you telling us all this stuff? He says, just trying to get you to think. And so the New York Times says, McLuhan reveals it all. He's just a guy trying to make us think. We don't have to think about what he's telling us.
Yeah, we don't have to think now.
They celebrated. They thought he got exposed. They were just trying to make
it was all a trick to make us think.
Yeah, yeah.
Just trying to trick us into thinking something.
So, so let me see. So we should apply this to, you know, Derek's failure of meteorology, Clinton's failure of meteorology, and what they're trying to do. See, Clinton, would you kind of explain, once you gave the history, what did you say to them, we want to bring the humanities in?
Yes.
I don't know if that's what you want to say. The humanities, who gives a fuck about the humanities? You want to, that's just going back to history and saying, well,
the audience, I'm saying what they... I'm speaking in terms they understand, Bob. We need to bring the old good style of literary criticism from the 30s back that developed out like I even mentioned at the start. Oh yeah, McLuhan's style of literary criticism was developed out of scriptural exegesis. But I'm not going to start fleshing that fucking out on stage now, am I? So I just called out the humanities at the end to tie a bow on it, right? Just like, you know.
Yeah, but what was your point?
My point is here, if there is a way to bring, you know, the humanities as opposed to STEM, like if you look at the university as cut down the middle and half of it is science and half of it is arts, if there is a way for the arts and the sciences to talk about computers, this is the ground where it has to happen. And the only ground where it happens is to make sense. And I didn't say this, but my point is, at any other level, when computers are these commodity objects, we get dystopian sci-fi and bullshit and postmodernism and fucking Jean Baudrillard and fucking like simulacrum and all this garbage because the artists don't understand fucking computers. We can't teach computers to the artists. So we need to teach fucking the arts to the fucking people who do understand computers. But even most people in sciences don't understand computers. Only the Free Software Foundation people do because they're the only ones who actually own their computer and understand it. Because they deal in source code. But they deal in source code in a humane way. They know how to compile it and how to package it and how to solve their dependencies. Like, they've got human systems and living human culture about how to relate to every level of your stack and organizational structures and team names. And they understand how to have humans working with their computer at every level. They're the only ones who understand that they're full machine as a group. Right? That's my point. It's the only culture we have on the planet of humans understanding their computer and working together and working on their computers together. That's my fucking...
Yep. Yeah, but I think it smacks of efficient causality understanding, not the formal causality or other words to indicate the larger effects of where we got to today. I mean, they're actually going to have a fucking nuclear war for no reason over a nowhere place unless... the aliens are here and they're doing it.
Yeah, Ukraine's strong. I know.
But see, I don't think those guys. I don't see them understanding. They what you're saying is understanding. It's not the kind of understanding people need.
Okay,
Bob. I want to make a point.
Yeah, please do.
Okay, so first time I called into Bob, Bob asked me, like, what do you do? And I told him, I do, like, web development. Bob said, ah, you're a janitor. So, Clinton, so all these things you're talking about, like, keeping, you know, the dependencies clean. I mean, yeah. Those are, like, janitorial work.
Yeah, they are. Yes. And if we don't do them, we lose touch with the fabric of reality forever.
Right.
I know. We're already in a strange reality or non-reality.
You are. Yes, lots of people are. No.
Clinton, you're the one, the biggest victim, because you don't recognize you were.
Yeah.
And you're not
I'm
immune.
I'm clinging to the delusion of knowing what I'm looking at.
You're not immune to what's happening.
Yes. I concede the point. I'm falling with style. All right.
But the, I'm not saying it's hopeless, pretty hopeless, but is there a way to talk about it? Or maybe you're getting close to a point that needs to be said that's not being said. What would that be?
Well, the point that I've been returning to a lot lately is that we've forgotten computers aren't a communications medium. Everyone's like, what's the internet doing to us? The internet's the biggest thing that happened in the world. Like, no, computers are the biggest thing that happened to us in the world. Biggest thing happened to us in the world since the telegraph. The internet is not crazier than the telegraph. It's not crazier than computers.
Hmm.
Right? Computers are not a communications medium. The medium inside the computer, the content of the computer, is a communications medium, and that's the fucking telegraph.
Well, are you saying electricity is what's doing it to us?
Yes. If you want to talk about the communications medium, then what's the telegraph doing to us is the question. If you want to talk about computers, you say, what's computers doing to us? And that's what McLuhan pointed out in the 40s, what the fuck the computer was doing, right? It's normalizing everything and homogenizing arts and gathering statistics and putting everyone in a fucking box, right? It's measuring instead, right? It's turning us into fucking points on our giant bullshit Cartesian graph to be parameterized and experimented on like guinea pigs by social engineers, right? That's what computers have done to us. They've created simulations to model reality so that people can try to affect culture and, you know, it's a giant Procrustean bed, right? Now, all the conversations about smartphones today are only looking at smartphones as fucking communications devices and as things feeding this giant cybernetic monster. But they ignore the fact that computers can be used offline. They can be offline. You can have a computer with no internet. You can do anything with it. And I've told this to you before and you've made fun of me, like, what are you doing all by yourself on your computer with no internet? Look, you're the biggest solipsist in the world, Clinton. All fucking by yourself. Holy shit, you in a box. You're trapped in your private fucking dream, unconnected to the rest of the planet. Like, you know, and it's like, yeah, that's actually what computers are, and that's probably what they will be long after we destroy our fucking ability to communicate with one another because the noise and the deep fakes and the bullshit and the bots and the grifters right? The internet will become unusable in the worst case scenario.
Do you see like a mesh future?
Maybe.
A mesh?
Yeah, man. Absolutely. But I feel like maybe if I'm ahead of the curve, then people will all become super paranoid and stick to fucking sneaker net or, yeah, direct mesh networking, right? Or I'm sure there will be cryptography. See, I feel like cryptocurrencies and blockchain have distracted people from what cryptography is. Like the buzzword crypto is temporarily like erased cryptography as a real thing that people talk about. You talk about crypto, people think you're talking about Bitcoin. Like, no, I'm talking about fucking, like, sorry, like, we've been, like, encrypting things for fucking centuries, asshole. Like, the word crypto is not made up to sell your fucking, like, attack the Fed, bring back the gold standard, third line of approach, you libertarians, all right, like, you know. Cryptography wasn't invented for a libertarian ecosystem, but that's besides the point. just people don't know what the fucking computers are. So I don't trust anything they say about what the effects of the internet are if they don't even know what the fuck a computer is. We don't know what a society who understands computers looks like. We never had one. We don't know what a culture that understands computers even looks like. Who could create such a culture? People who understand computers.
You could say that people basically want health, food and sex, and entertainment some way. Someone else would say, no, some people like to work. They don't need to have slack. Some people don't like sex. So you could have other versions. But generally, people got on the internet. I remember James telling me this in Hollywood. So this would be 2000 or so. He couldn't get a date anymore because you had to be, doing the phones, whatever the phones were at that point. And maybe even had to go through a dating place. So that changed. Well, everybody got on that stuff because they thought that would help them solve whatever desires of those basic needs they wanted. That's why people do these things. They're going to go to Metaverse for these reasons. It's going to help me deal with food, sleep, health, exercise, sex, recreation, entertainment.
Yeah.
That's the reason humans got together.
Yeah, everything's going to be gamified to fucking hell. It's going to be a fucking torture.
You're being too negative about it. You're bringing your negativity into it. Drop that. Look at what people are. Do people have superficial lives?
Yeah, I guess we're recording, but I'm not counting this. I'm counting this as my private life. I'm not counting this as my private opinion. I'm not being a value judgment free.
You're projecting your personal bias? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I feel entitled to project my personal bias in private conversation.
Yeah, man, it's personal bias projecting time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but, I walk along the beach here, and people, all kinds of ugly people there, and poor people. But the economy is lowered enough that they can come here and experience Maui, which, mm-hmm. 80 years ago, only Elvis got to experience. Making a movie or something. McLuhan has an interesting statement in the 40s, something about the artist's condition never changes, but the condition for art changes, something like that. And then he has to take the day that man is always still the content. There's always the anxiety of consciousness. So everybody always had that for millennia. But then there's different clothing, different styles that go with it, and people always adapt to it. So they live in filth, medieval times compared to us, but it wasn't a problem for them. And our sterility is not a problem for people. See, so you got to get into, you got the eternals going on, and then you have to figure out what are the temporary shocking novelties that get people to forget the eternals and think there's some other reason that things are happening. You could look at McLuhan's work as just a modern poem, and he described the present like any whatever the poets did with in 1850 or 1790 or Shakespeare's time.
The Eternals. Are we talking about Back to Methuselah, the play by?
No. I'm just saying the endless condition of humans.
Okay.
Probably. Yeah. It'd be interesting. You met someone from 800 years ago. Actually, the Evergreens did do that, and they say, if you brought someone from 1200 here, when it got dark, they'd say, oh, okay, it's time to go to sleep. Or during the day, okay, we got to go out there and hunt. Got to get some food. And then you bring him a plate of food, and he didn't know how you got it. So all the normal, you could say, technologies that 800 years ago they never had, the Emery said that what would happen, the guy would gradually feel out of sync. He couldn't come up with a mental reason why everything was happening, why the light stayed on, why there was no darkness. And he'd get alienated by that. He'd get, feel lonely, isolated or something. So we metaphorically have done that collectively. you know, sped everything up over 800 years, so people are out of sync with it. Or some of them are, others aren't. So then you start thinking of Duchamp. Well, there's no solution because there's no problem. See, so what is the problem? You gotta make your issue about the alienation that's happening that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
How much is that spreading and how much is it an issue? Like Don Thiel, in his book on McLuhan, says that McLuhan exaggerates the problems of media. If you take some kind of bland view that humans are always just humans and dealing with the issues and satisfying their needs whatever way they can, and some poet comes along, no, this is really bad. This is going to wipe out literacy. And so I think Theo was saying, you look at what's happened since the 50s, nothing drastic happened that McLuhan said would happen.
Hmm.
Like, literacy isn't gone. Maybe no. More people read than ever. But how important is reading?
They go through the motions of reading.
Does anybody ever know who's doing what? And most things that look like advances happen by accident with strange people that you never would suspect would be involved with that, would come up with the breakthrough. And that's the part of mystery of existence that the poets celebrate, you know, the unknown, mm-hmm. the unforeseen. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The only, what is definitely the most obvious difference is that everybody can fucking broadcast now.
Mm-hmm.
There's the world of communication. So what does that do to the eternal norms of humans' desires or appetites? It probably does. It does make a different. It gets people distracted, right? So then people come in and say, "Everybody's so distracted; they're losing sense of reality." Well, we've gotten used to being distracted. There's those people on the beach there who are not looking at the water but are watching their texting. It'd be silly for me to go up and tell them, "You're missing out on a lot of stuff." They say, "Fuck you! I'm not missing out. I think it's nice here. I like the weather. Looks nice. Feels warm. I go in the water in half an hour, but I want to see what I'm getting on my texting. It's interesting."
Being a broadcaster has become cliche. It's so popular.
Right, but everybody does it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that
you're broadcasting.
The fact that everyone today is a broadcaster is cliched, but 50 years from now it'll become an archetypal symbol of the 2010s and the 2020s, right?
Yeah. And by then people have
when you want to make fun of people if when you want in the future when you want to make fun of us in here and now you show people broadcasting everything all the time from Scream 5 or whatever the fuck it was, you know. Yeah. You make fun.
Right, everyone's
a podcaster.
Right, but they would be in the new situation in 50 years that would make this look stupid would be if everybody had some kind of ESP. They didn't need gadgets.
Yeah, yeah. There were still people commissioned to paint artwork for other people. People still bothered to learn how to paint. They didn't just have an AI make painting for them on demand. Yeah. What kind of sucker would learn to paint?
Okay, so let's take what Derek said. He's pointing out transparency. That leaves the ESP. Intuition, that's ESP. Tactility is ESP. Data, data. What does big data mean to you? Is it about the search mechanism?
Yeah, it's the fact that your webpage, Dimitri could, the web page is tracking everything you do. When you're on Twitter, Twitter knows how fast you're scrolling, how long you're looking at each thing, whether your mouse is hovering over something that you haven't clicked it yet. It's capturing all of it. Every single fucking thing it can capture, it's capturing. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. You're the website that's on your browser, you haven't even clicked anything. It's running a lot of shit, watching your mouse move around. Watching you scroll. Oh, he paid attention to that ad, maybe. There's a 6% more chance, right? Like, is that the fact that it's vacuuming up so many fucking seemingly insignificant details and then search for patterns, right? Oh, you know.
It's actually doing this for two reasons.
Yeah.
So one reason is to track you, to know what your habits are. And the second is as a form of security for the companies developing those websites. Because they have many tests that check to see whether all of this functionality it works after all the changes they're bringing in every day. And so these analytics is also a helpful way to gauge the main functionality and that nothing has been messed up.
Oh, look, the number of users of this feature has decreased 99%. Maybe the button is hidden or something. We fucked something up, right?
Yeah.
So around 2012, they said, well, we'll just transfer the economy and claim we're fucking doing something, making wealth. And they sold this data to each other and claimed it was getting somewheres. You know, they made up. There was no economy after 2008, and they made up the fucking economy. They claimed that we're wealthy because we sold all this shit that we got from you, your users, and to another major digital company. What a scam that is, you know, because it doesn't feed people. Why did they have to? Now, McLuhan would say literate individuality has to have ownership. So Facebook and them are natural products of the West, not China, but of the West, where you need to have private individual measurement of your input to the society.
Yeah, like, think about Napster, Bob. Like, hey, we don't, like, you can just copy music infinitely. It's, like, much worse than fucking pirating audio tapes. Like, fuck making cassette tapes for your friends. That's nothing. Forget, like, don't copy that floppy. Like, fuck magnetic media. Napster shows that, you know, in the digital domain, as all these retards talk, in the digital domain, right, like, the price of reproducing... You can't commoditize this shit. It's just infinitely copyable for free. The last 20 years have been, how do we build a commoditized information economy in an environment which is innately, everything is copied for free infinitely, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why it's a scam, because it's literally working exactly opposite to what the precise thing this shit is good at, which is instantly copying data and having every computer, you know, have the same information on it as much as you want, right? So they're swimming uphill against the impossible avalanche of the very nature of computers, which are free. Computers are free, right?
Yeah. So, what is it in people that say we have to defend our individual rights and protect ourselves from the Borg? Why do they – what are you protecting? They're surveilling you anyways, secretly. So the whole issues that create the alt-right – desire to get rid of the Borg and establish a private identity, that's just a reaction of literate civilization.
Yeah, right. Well, the mass mind, the Borg mind.
Yeah, China
is the satanic parody of the Christic communal mass
body. The body of Christ, the dying
division. Yeah. So what are people scared of? They're scared of true Holy Spirit facilitated, go back to the illusion of the beginning, the Holy Spirit facilitated communion between people in favor of communication only mediated by these forms, which reduce, like a Procrustean bed, cut away all the parts of humanity that are incompatible with what the computer wants us to be. And right, oh, we can have people being predictable, so let's make sure they can't be anything more than what the computer can understand them to be, so that they fit within the system, they fit within the model, and the digital unconscious is a shallow pool we control, and their consciousness dwells only within the digital domain, right? So it's like, yeah, why would that be fun? Who would be for that? Unless you're fucking a billionaire who wants to literally control the masses and not be overthrown and, you know, maintain your fucking oligarchy. Who the fuck wants to control? Who the fuck wants all of society to be captured in a dead computer generated hallucination that they didn't democratically vote for, except...
okay, but what happened, Clinton, to all this stuff, you know, protects the tyranny and whatever? Tyranny happened. Millions of people stole money, and you can't tell why anybody's wealthy anymore. Nothing... You have all this police surveillance. None of it's protected. And you're going to find out from the Ukraine problem that what NATO and everybody was attempting to claim their purpose was the last 60 years is going to fail. So that means nobody successfully did anything. Now, you look through human history, humans never did succeed at anything other than survive. And even that, but, you know, well, yeah, they survived. That's pretty good. They may not be happy, but they survived. And happiness is easily ignored because you got to hunt and eat and do what you do to survive. So nothing, you know, the university people sit around trying to protect us, and they fail at everything. You look around society, you're totally alienated, Clinton, and nothing that could have done happened. So all the bad stuff happened that you project as bad. And,
sure.
So it's a fraud that the cops are protecting us, or the military is protecting us.
Well, I feel so much better now. Thanks, Bob.
Well, you should. You should realize I don't have to worry so much. I'm, quote, doomed. And what's wrong with being doomed? You know, we don't know what happens when you die.
Yeah, it's just the projection of mortality. Oh, yeah, there you go. Denial of death. I guess Ernest Becker was right. Really, all this of doom at the large scale is just a projection of my own fear of my own mortality as an individual, obviously.
When you're at the bar with a bunch of people, you ever sort of looked at them? And everyone's presenting, well, pretending they're human and got the vulnerabilities, but none of them really have that. You get taken aside. They're going to claim they fucking know what's going on, and they're happy, and they don't mind dying, and they're not afraid of death. They make all these statements. Private, you know, sovereignty, private bravado. But you get together in a group, and then everybody starts adjusting to the ideas that are said, and they pretend they're weak, and they make up problems just to talk about it.
Oh, yeah, there's... Okay, that's what you're saying there. There is a potential for...
There's an irony in human interaction.
Yeah, well, you know, for a show of solidarity or understanding, you know...
Or pretending you resonate with the person for whatever purposes you have to pretend that you have that image.
I'm sure not everyone's pretending.
Well, they got purposes.
They do a lot. There's a lot of... What's that called? Is that the dissimulation, right? I never really quite got that term.
Dissembling?
No, like dissimulation or something. Okay, it doesn't
you mean
matter.
Lying?
Yeah, like faking or something. I don't know. It's some weird term. I never Baudrillard uses it more than anyone else.
Right.
Anyway. So where does this? How does this tie into the larger?
Okay, so we go back to Kirchhoff.
Okay.
Names five words. What an absurd proposal. What are we supposed to do? Okay, we got five new words to cover us for the next 5 years. Transparency, tactility, intuition, big data, and hyper-pertinent.
Hyper-pertinent.
What's the point of saying these words? So the guys who did that, they didn't present to Kirchhoff properly. They didn't allow him to give a context for why he was saying these five words. And... they're just trying to make. I call it producer mania. They're just trying to have a place to make interviews and put it up there and claim they're doing something. Or
yeah, they got a gimmick, a standard thing. They go around and ask people what their five words is, right? And that's why they got 33 fucking subscribers, because it's a stupid